From the streets of San Francisco to the mean streets of Brooklyn, it's singer-songwriter Mark Eitzel on The Culture Kitch. Converge is the word.
Give him lab cigarettes, sawdust, even a wheel to run. I tell him you should be happy, there's no reason to stare. I play him Mariah Carey so there's butterflies and rainbows in the air. His name is Saint Michael and he's a bit of a class clown. He laughs with the people who always laugh him down. He would hang himself except he already chewed through the rope. He would rise on heaven's wings except he's miserable as the Pope. Yeah, I know the party's over. Oh, but whoops, would you look at that, my glass is still half full. I show it to Saint Michael, but his eyes, they drift like frost as he watches all the goodness in his heart burn away like exhaust. That comes in handy when you always want more. It magically fills as the boats get empty from the tired swimmer who can no longer see the shore. Yeah, no. Just sparks falling down wires. They have no harp, they always sing. They are the heroine in everything. A beauty easy to explain away. But tell me, how do you make it stay? You gotta fight for it, you gotta fight for it. You gotta fight for it, you gotta fight for it. You gotta fight for it.
Joining us today on The Culture Kitch is the San Francisco-based singer-songwriter and leader of the alternative collective known as American Music Club, Mr. Mark Eitzel. Mark, welcome to The Culture Kitch.
Thank you.
Tell me about American Music Club. How did it ultimately come together back in the 80s?
Well, it started with I did two versions of American Music Club before the current one, and you know it was an acoustic thing, and it was, you know, stand up bass and acoustic guitar, and then after that it was a really large band with a guitar player who wants to play like he's an Iggy Pop's band, and a guy who played a Carhood, you know, and trumpets and background singers and the whole thing, and that dissolved, and I sort of decided I wanted to only play with people who are pretty ambitious, who are willing to travel and willing to really do it. And that's when I Vudi, the guitar player, came to one of my shows. I was a band called the Naked Skinnies when I was younger, and we had cleared out the whole room. You know, we did. We had a song that was about 10 minutes long, and it was I think one note. And our singer, she basically sings really out of tune, and she just, you know, so I play one note for 10 minutes, and she sings. And
doing the Miles thing, one note.
I don't know. I have no idea. But anyway, clear out the room, and Vudi came up to me afterwards, said, "That was amazing." I was like, "Fuck you, man. It sucked." You know? He's like, no. "If you ever want to play with me, give me a call." And I was like, "All right." So about a year passed. I called him.
And you guys dropped it in, and you added... I thought what was interesting for me in those early days was the pedal steel. I'd always been a pedal steel fan.
Yeah.
And the fact that you were using it in such a different context, you know?
Well, that's Bruce. I mean, Bruce is a genius, you know? Bruce basically didn't want to play... He never wanted to play pedal... He's been in country western bands for years, and he didn't want to play a country pedal steel. He wanted to do something different. Yeah, and he's a fucking musical genius, so...
Yeah, I think the only other guy that really approaches the instrument that way is Lenoir.
You know, I think Bruce doesn't realize how great he is, because he's... I don't think you... How can anyone realize that, you know? I mean, he's a virtuoso.
You're a well-read individual. What were some of your influences coming up that helped shape and define you as a songwriter?
Well, everything. I mean, everything from Roberta Flack to Yes to Neil Young to the Beatles to, like, X-Ray Specs to, like, I mean, every single thing. I mean, I grew up in England during the whole glam rock progressive rock era, and it's funny how quickly the styles changed in England, and they didn't really change here, you know. So I'm kind of used to that kind of thing. I mean, for hip-hop to be around 20 years is remarkable. It's great, you know, but it's so commodified now anyway. Did you see Hustle and Flow?
I haven't seen it yet.
What a great movie about music, about making music. It's fucking great.
Well, you know, it's, you know, I was talking to a friend, what's the next genre that's going to shape a generation? You know, hip-hop has been the last great one, and some of those artists are the only artists that really have any kind of longevity. Some of the hip-hop guys have crossed over into film.
Because also they're making music that's cutting edge, and it's on the radio, you know. It's, nothing else is on the radio, nothing else really deserves that much exposure, because it's all cutting edge, and it reflects this culture so beautifully. You know, it's we've got criminals running the White House. We've got criminals running all the corporations. You know, and it reflects that completely amoral, like get what you can, get the fuck out of the ghetto, kind of thing, which is America. You know.
Yeah. No, that's a very good point. Very, very good point.
But yeah, I don't know what the next. I don't know, for white people who are, you know, a little more middle class, perhaps, or more thoughtful. I don't know. More thoughtful, please. But, you know, I don't know. I was talking to this kid in England, and he was like, "Well, you know, I really just want to have somebody introduce every single song and then dance, and I just want to have, like, beats." I was like, "Good, okay." You know, I don't know what it is, but
that's Go Team. Have you heard the record Go Team?
No.
It's like, it's a mishmash of beats and chanting and cheerleading, and it's like the Beastie Boys meets, I don't know, it sounds like cheering to me, and it's cool, and it works, it's really, it's all cut up. My friend's like, "I don't like this." I'm like, you're not opening up to it. It really is cool.
I have a friend, his name is Will, he's not much younger, but he used to be in a band called Imperial Teen, and he made a boy band record, you know, and it's brilliant, it's absolutely brilliant. Emerge won't put it out. I'm like, "No, you're wrong, it's great, you know, it's insanely great."
The old guard, you know, some of the label guys. And I was going to lead to another question. You know, here you had a band that was really defining what was happening in San Francisco, you and a handful of other bands. You know, one of my other favorite bands happens to be from the same time, maybe a couple years later, Red House Painters.
Sure.
You guys kind of came up the ranks. You were with a minor label, which was a cool indie label, Alias.
Right.
And then you get signed to a major label, and, like, now the pressure's on. The corporate. Yeah. What was that all about? Was that...
Well, actually, in many ways, it was just great, because At first, there was no pressure. I feel bad about it, really. I mean, they treated us so well, you know. I treated us better than Alias did, you know. And it was like, well, not really. I mean, Alias was good, too. I don't know, but Jesus Christ, you know. They own the master, and they don't put the records out, and we don't know what to do. I think we're just going to put it on the web for free to download. Booty, like, he's a great songwriter, but he won't let me sing his songs. He says, Mark, I don't like your melody choices. And Danny, like, Danny sings things that only Danny can sing. I mean, so that's what we're like, you know.
Interesting. I'd love, you know, I haven't heard any of Booty's music. Has he done any solo?
Oh, he's done it. He's got this band called Clovis de la Forêt, Clovis of the Forest. My mother is French, so I do pronounce it like that. I'm sorry, even though I can barely speak French, you know. And you know, I mean, it's beautiful, beautiful, weird songs. Classics like Pussy Willow, Let Me Lie Under Your Pussy Willow, Pussy, 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 Pussy Willow. Things like that, charming, effervescent.
It like sounds like peaches.
Yeah, right, you know, just brilliant, brilliant songs, but no one, I mean, he's recorded this album like 8 times with Daniel Lanois, but with Daniel Lanois's assistant, you know, at Daniel, at
Malcolm,
at,
Malcolm Burns?
No, earlier. I forget his name. At Daniel Noah's studio, what's it called? Teatro there, and then at another place. And he's been doing this for about 10 years. And it all sounds great, and he just won't, you know. I go to his house, and he has a row of DATs. And once I had some weed, and I wanted to put the weed in and so I borrowed a DAT cover for the day, because I was taking it somewhere. And I put it back. I put the DAT in and put it back. He says, "Mark, you touched my music. Did you listen to any of it?" I was like, no, I just borrowed the cover. It's like, "Mark, never touch my music."
One of my favorite songs by you guys is What the Pillar of Salt Held Up.
Oh, yeah. That's the song which starts with, "The takeoff makes no sound, yeah, it's high and far away, yeah." It's just, you know, I tried it, like, I always think that there's more than this, you know? Like I was just having breakfast talking with my friend here, you know, and we're talking about, like, you know, how as animals we're barely beyond being animate. We're barely beyond being a piece of concrete. Only, you know, and all this stuff from the mind is such a, only a glimmer of what is, you know? And that's how I feel in my heart. I think that song is like, I love airplanes. and I, she looked back and,
"The takeoff makes no sound, it's high and far away, in the blue sky by the moon. It takes my breath away, what you choose, what you choose to throw away into the undertow. A happiness like we'll never know. You can't overcome bitterness and pain, and you don't remember how to start your life again. And you were born to please, born to put on a show, but you always run away from a happiness like we'll never know. No hiding place in all the sky, no camouflage keep you warm at night, and no clothes you got seem to keep out the wind or the rain. No way out from your shame. The takeoff makes no sound as you fly away, with that look on your face that gives it all away. Secrets that the sea would never tell a soul, but where the current flows, a happiness like we'll never know.
Librarian?
I want to be. That's my next job, actually, after I come to my senses and
retire. Didn't you work in the library for a while?
I did for about a year. Yeah. I loved it.
Yeah. But I mean, as someone who has read a lot as well, I mean, I just see so many cross-references to different writers and such. What do you read for fiction? What do you read to unwind?
Oh, science fiction. Totally. I'm a huge science fiction nut. And also Fitzgerald. I just read The Last Tycoon, and now I'm doing Ten Years of the Night, you know, and it's been years, and he's so great. What else? Damn, Everything by Tennessee Williams and Everything by, New Yorker, James Baldwin. Yeah. Everything by James Baldwin. Just, and it's funny because he's not a great writer. He's not like a perfect writer, you know, like who is, I don't know, everyone.
Well,
that,
you know, Hemingway, the conciseness of his words.
Yeah, beautiful, right? And yeah. And what a weak man, but yeah. But Baldwin really had a heart. Right. I'm reading something now, and I forget what, I just read something, it really made me, oh, my friend's writing is really good. Richard Fisher.
All right.
Brilliant writer.
Who's he writing for?
Nobody.
Maybe he'll write for the site. Maybe we can get him to, you know. We've got some good writers on the site,
oh, yeah?
Which is encouraging.
That's
you
good,
know,
that's
and
good.
It's guys and gals our age. I call us the tweeners. We're not really baby boomers. We're not X generation.
Exactly.
You know, and we're kind of stuck between two marketing groups of, you know, demographic.
We always have been. I know. It's weird.
But yet we have the influence of both.
Because, yeah, yeah.
You know, we had the whole hippie kind of progressive rock thing, then the punk ethos and all that.
Right.
You can't help but be influenced in a weird kind of way by all that.
It's true, it's true. Yeah. And I don't know where I'm going. I mean, I know that... Yeah, I'm really just reinventing my songwriting right now. It's really hard to write songs these days because I'm really changing the way I approach it. It's funny. Anyway. Because of those influences, because of that, what you're saying, you know, just, yeah. Because it's always a struggle, when you write anything, it's always a struggle between, like what people, how you perceive yourself, how others perceive you, and there's always a tension there, because you're always trying to write from the heart, but you have to make something that's perceptible, and, you know... Yeah, I'm not sure where to go, actually. I'm writing all these political songs, too, which is kind of a waste of time. You know, it's too easy.
Well, it's too easy. You know, Paris is burning and, you know,
yeah.
the disaster relief and, you know, the world is falling apart at the seams.
And, you know, and we have a, you know, and just the ongoing struggle to make this country a fascist state, you know.
The you know, the continued struggle to try to control the internet, which is fascinating because I think it's bigger than the Gutenberg press, the internet.
Oh, it is.
You know?
It is, but it's much more delicate. You know, I mean, yeah. I mean, when the corporation, when Clear Channel starts to own, like, every single cable, every single pipeline for the internet, Clear Channel will go through and they will not allow you to access many things, you know? And they're doing it for your own good, man.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, not only that, but just how they're squeezing the American public into just being like what, in the 60s when we were young, you know, it's like, well, it was like one parent could support the whole family. Now two parents, it takes two parents. People don't realize that. People don't realize that wages really haven't risen for 10 years at all across the board, you know?
But yet real estate in San Francisco, New York, in these, you know, these great cities, you know, allegedly with the liberal lifestyles.
Well, I mean, where I live is sort of the center of the internet. And I was talking to a friend of mine in Berkeley, you know, one of these guys who started the internet, you know. And I was, it's like, so, yeah, I mean, we live in this amazing place. He says, yeah, Mark, you live in this amazing place, very liberal, very open, very free, like a place like... Very highly educated people are all delivering a lifestyle which is sort of the paradigm for what America could be. But at the same time, what's paying for it is that they're inventing more and more ways for our privacy to evaporate. It's our future, you know. I mean, after the Vietnam War, there was a depression that lasted a decade. Think about after this 10 years war that we're waging for just to steal their oil from them, you know, because America, the big innovator, can't actually manufacture, you know, we can't come up with a solution.
We can come up, they just don't want to, the big cartels don't want to hear the solutions.
Exactly, yeah. So this, I'm sure that everyone who's been listening to this stream has already turned it off by now.
Maybe not, we hope that there's some that wake up and smell the reality, Mark.
Yeah.
And I think it's good to have this discourse. We had Michael Fronte on from Spearhead.
Sure.
And, you know, Michael and I were discussing, and this is something that I was amazed that my friends didn't know. Bush didn't have a passport when he was nominated into office.
Yeah.
And to me, that is a staggering...
Mexico was the first foreign capital he ever visited
yeah.
in his life.
Yeah, you've seen reality.
Yeah.
Outside of these, you know, this amazing country that we live in that has so much, but to see how the rest of the world is a sobering... reality
Bush,
check.
Bush and all the people that like him have never even walked down, you know, like Mission Street in San Francisco. They've never even walked, probably never even walked down a street all the way. You know, like a street like this.
Right.
From there to there.
Yeah.
They'd be terrified.
Right.
They'd be terrified.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you know, we'll be infected by the little people.
Right.
You know?
No, well, but this is what we contend with, and this
I
is what we...
despise these people. I'm semi-ashamed, but I can't help myself, you know.
Well, you have to have, you know, all art, you have to have a muse.
No, I know, but...
Don't be ashamed, Mark. Share.
No, sure. I don't know. I mean, you know, I just can't help it. I don't know. The newest song I'm writing is called I Can't Help Myself. It's just coming out of me. You're so very Eva. You're so very Eva. You're so very Eva Braun. You know, it's got... She's, you know, it's about a woman with a little dog.
Yeah.
You know...
Mark, it's all good. You know,
yeah,
I think I think it is. I think that complacency is very sad in music, art, literature. You get to a point and you have to evolve.
I have to say, I don't trust a songwriter that isn't, or an artist that in, even if they're conservative, if they're not political, I don't understand it.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't. How can you have love in your heart and not be political?
You know, I read something, an op-ed piece on, like, you know, this guy was up in arms about Bono proselytizing. I said, but at least he's taking a position that, and he's, I think he believes in it. I think he does,
you know.
And I think that's good for him. He has the platform to try to affect some change. What's wrong with that?
Nothing at all.
No.
I mean,
what's wrong with writing a song that may make people, you know, For What It's Worth by the Buffalo Springfield was an amazing, galvanizing song when it came out.
Right.
What happened to those songs?
I know. They don't exist, you know, like something as subtle as a pawn in the game, you know. It's like, what a great, great political song, because it's really about, you know, the compromises we make every day and how they all add up.
Well, punk rock had that, I mean, yeah, the early.
Sort of.
The Clash and, you know, I think a lot of the bands, that, like the Specials, the bands,
right.
early UB40, when they really were trying to... say, hey, this is how London, this is how the UK is.
And hip-hop, too. Hip-hop,
yeah,
with its absolute denial of any politics, with its absolutely, you know, get me the fucking, like, limo. It's like, that's such a fuck you to... Well, then, yeah, I kind of love it. And also, like young guys, this in San Francisco, I don't know if it's true here, the new thing is, when you go by a middle-aged man, like myself...
Like us?
Yeah, it's just to start screaming gibberish.
No, I haven't heard
it's
that yet.
It's so interesting. It's such a good gesture.
Wow.
Just like, blah, blah! You know? I really...
That's saying a lot, man. That's
it is.
That's some kind of therapy mode.
It's
some kind of therapy.
Maybe
I think there's a song in there, Mark.
I do. I think also there's a whole generation grew up hating books, you know?
Now, there's something interesting, you know, because you ask the average kid who has... you know, a nanosecond's worth of attention span to sit down and read a great piece of fiction.
Yeah.
It's
no, but it's a political gesture. It's how people are raised. I mean, you know, the culture is affected from the bottom, you know, and for 30 years America spent more money on prisons than it has on schools. So what we have is like the bullies, you know, in the school win, you know. Which is fair enough. That's what America is now. You know.
Man, you're bumming me out, man. No, not at all, actually. Actually, you know, you got me... great conversation. You got me sidetracked. I'm, you know, you have time? You got a little bit more time?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Okay, good. Something that really struck me as an incredible musical experiment was The Ugly American. And
yeah, I mean, I gotta say, you know, and I love all the people associated with it, but I have to say, I did it for a vacation. in Greece.
Oh, don't say that.
I did. I did it for a vacation in Greece. And then I didn't realize that in November, there's nowhere to go but Athens. And Athens is like a fucking armpit. You know, it is. I'm sorry. It's, except for the Acropolis, the place is like an ashtray, an overflowing ashtray full of angry people in a hurry, you know. And I just sat there for a month and I recorded this record with incredibly talented, bright, good people. And I think in Athens, in Greece, they really need to define themselves as good artists. And there's a lot of great artists there. But the whole tradition of Greek songwriting and communist Greek songwriting is great, incredible. And I got a good education of it. But overall, I think it was a big mistake. I did that one, then I did an album of covers, and I think my manager at the time was just trying to do something that would make me at all crossover. And I went along, but I was a fool. I should have just put out new albums, because I had so many songs I was writing. They're now gone, you know. So it's too bad.
Well, you educated yourself, as you said. So,
yeah.
You know, and I think there's some incredible, the arrangements are just breathtaking on that record.
It's a great record, yeah. But I wish I hadn't made it.
You do something that I think is very interesting. You take cover songs and kind of make them your own, which is a very hard thing to do.
Yeah.
Which songs do you wish you would have written?
Well, the songs on that covers record, I didn't pick any of them. I picked maybe two. And, like, honestly, that one I don't have any pleasure in at all. I feel ashamed about that one. I mean, you know, the Boy George cover, he loves it, by the way. Which songs? I mean, like, the song that I cover now that I wish I would have written is Heart and Soul by Joy Division. And also, God, so many, man. I mean,
thankfully you didn't do Level Terrace Apart, because we've had, like, you know, 45 versions of that.
I would not even touch that. No, I do Heart and Soul. But, yeah. Yeah.
So what one song defines you from your canon of work?
Oh, man. Maybe What the Pillar of Salt Held Up, or I don't know, man. I've written so many songs that
Takeoff Makes No Sound, man. What a great
I've written so many songs that kind of... See, it's easy to be disheartened, you know, because I'm always trying to break through, and it never succeeds. Even last night, all the bored teens just really fed into my own internal, like, yeah, right, you know. So I don't think there's any song that really defines me.
Maybe it defines you during that moment in time.
Right. I mean, the song I'm writing now defines me. I'm writing a song, Everyone's Welcome. That defines me right now. Because it's in my head all the time. So.
What piece of visual art best describes you as a person?
Oh, I don't know. There's this... Did you go to the Jackson Pollock exhibit when it was here?
No, I missed it.
Oh, my God. All the big black and white Jackson Pollocks, any of those define me, you know. Triumph of the Will, you know what I mean? It's like all about, like, you know. I mean, like a lot of the electronic music, like twerk or something, where they use, as part of it, they use random sort of things. They manipulate random. I love that. I love, there's this painting, I don't know, there's so many, but I'd go with any Pollock.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
What young singer-songwriters have you heard as of late, or in the last couple of years?
Well, of course, Bright Eyes is great. Connor is a genius, you know, and I mostly listen to, like, things without words, because I get so, because... Songs are hard, man, for me to listen to. You know, Dylan, I just discovered, like, I've never really listened to Dylan much, and I just discovered the whole bootleg series. You know, like, Blood in the Tracks, everyone's Blood in the Tracks, and I bought it, and I was like, it sucks. You know, it just sucks. It sounds so throwaway. He sounds so tired. But when you hear those songs played acoustically, it's passionate, and it's brilliant. And it's suddenly, it's like, oh, yeah, it's great.
Do you have a favorite San Francisco band, an unsung heroes band in San Fran that never
Yeah,
made it?
Well, there's this band called the Enablers who are it's like a guy who screams his poetry over the music, you know. I love it. They're amazing. And Court and Spark I like a lot, you know, like a local band. There's so many bands. It's like there's so many bands that are like imitating like Franz Ferdinand and like
who are imitating Gang of Four and
who are all dressed up in costumes, and you know, everyone's got a uniform on now, you know, and it's just pathetic. And I'm sorry. The thing is, it's not for old people anyway. It's for young people, you know. So, and I understand that. But if I have to comment on it, I saw this great band in San Francisco. They were great for the first two songs, and then it was like, oh, that's your reference. Okay, you know.
That's the problem when you get old. You have all these reference points.
Yeah.
Young kids don't have them. Maybe it's just filtered through their parents' record collections
or whatever. That's right. You know, and that's why it's for young people. You know?
What advice do you have for those young up-and-coming musicians, artists, writers, painters?
Yeah, I don't know. What advice? You know, your job isn't selling yourself. Your job is making the art. That's the first thing. You know, a lot of people think that, you know, especially now, I mean, God, America, man. It's like we're all salesmen. We're all like... We're all prisoners of the system, and it's ridiculous. But make great art, and fuck the rest of it, and people will find you.
And how would you like to be remembered?
Oh, as a bon vivant, you know, like charming, friendly, happy person.
Right.
Which I really am. Everyone thinks I'm this miserable wretch. I swear to God, man. I just dread like the fucking like you know, reading the piece on like what would it be, the equivalent of what's that web magazine, indie rock, Pitchfork, the equivalent of, you know, like having some motherfucker talk about what a miserable first person I was, you know. And I'm sure they're right, but you know, it's just like, come on. So
you know, to be misunderstood or not to have the depth to understand and appreciate who you are.
Well, even worse, history is written by winners.
Oh.
You know, fuck you, all you winners. Fuck you.
Mark, you know what? I think your songwriting and your art is fantastic, and I enjoyed this interview.
Well, thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thanks for being on the Culture Catch, and we'll see you soon.
Okay.
I lay all my songs at Johnny Mathis's feet. I said, Johnny, Johnny, tell me, can you tell me how to live? All my hopes are unraveling, and I just lost my lease on my house. Without love, doors or windows, without peace. And with a wave of his jewel-encrusted hand across the glittering Las Vegas scene, he said, you gotta learn how to disappear in the cell. Looked at my songs and he said, well, at first guess, never in my life have I ever seen such a mess. Why do you say everything as if you were a thief? Like what you stole, like what you preach is far from belief. And with a wave of his red, white and blue hand across the glittering Hollywood scene, he said, you gotta learn how to disappear in the silk and amphetamine. Yeah.
looked at my old collection of punk rock posters, anonymous scenes of disaffection, chaos and torture. And he said, if we're on the right track, that you a lamb jumping for the knife. He said, a real showman knows how to disappear in the spotlight. In the spotlight. In the spotlight. In the spotlight.
I'd like to thank today's sponsors. WebHSP for all of your web hosting needs. It's WebHSP. And the fine folks at FinalDraft.com for the finest script writing software. It's Final Draft. And Miss April Barton, Salon 303 at the Chelsea Hotel. This is Dusty Wright for the Culture Catch. We'll see you next time. Converge is the word.